to go now to the Bible. We're going to look at Hebrews chapter 2 and verses 14 through to 18. So we've been working our way through the book of Hebrews together. And this is the section that we're up to. We won't go through all of Hebrews together, but we have spent a fair bit of time in the beginning chapters, and this is the section that we're up to, Hebrews chapter 2 and verses 14 through to 18. And basically, the big theme of Hebrews is essentially that Jesus is better than everything else, even any kind of religion. Any kind of sort of attempts to make ourselves acceptable before God, Jesus is better than it all. And we're going to read from chapter 2 and verse 14 through to 18. It's up there on your screen. Inasmuch then as the children have partaken of flesh and blood, he himself, that's talking about Jesus, likewise shared in the same, that through death he might destroy him who had the power of death, that is the devil, and release those who through fear of death were all their lifetime subject to bondage. For indeed he does not give aid to angels, but he does give aid to the seed of Abraham. Therefore, in all things, he has like his brethren, that he might be a merciful and faithful high priest in things pertaining to God, to make propitiation for the sins of the people. For in that being tempted, he is able to aid those who are tempted. Now, there's a fair bit in that, but we're going to work our way through that to try to understand what God is saying to us in this part of his word. Just to say, so I'm going to speak now for about 25 minutes or so, and then there is going to be a chance for questions at the end. So if you have questions through this, feel free to just jot it down on your phone or make a note or something like that. And I'm really happy to answer questions after the talk. So just to let you know about that. Well, that's the way that things or people which seem impressive. I've lived through the inauguration of a couple of popes, as of course I think many of us here have. And it really is quite something, isn't it? I've just got a few pictures here of the inauguration of our most of the most recent pope. Just some different aspects of his inauguration. I mean, you'd have to say that there's a fair bit of fanfare there, isn't there? The Pope really is framed in this incredibly impressive way. And a lot of religions do this kind of thing. In religion, people often focus on things or people that seem impressive. Particularly when it comes to priests, okay, often there's a big focus on priests in religion. The priest is seen as someone who's particularly impressive because he stands between you and God. Religion does tend to focus in on people or things that seem impressive. Now, written the book of Hebrews, one of the impressive things that seemed to attract their attention was angels. The Jews, they were preoccupied with angels. Figures. They were intriguing and they were powerful. And they were seen as standing between you and God. And so many Jews became obsessed with them, as some people are today. And the writer to the Hebrews, he is concerned about this. And he's trying to say, hey, actually, we've got something better than that in Jesus. Angels. Why are you devoting all of this attention to these apparently impressive things, these apparently impressive beings? We've got Jesus. That's his point. We've got something better. Now, why is Jesus better? Well, in chapters 1 and 2 of this book, you have a couple of arguments that are really very, very different. The writer has made the point that Jesus is better than angels because he is God. Okay? He's divine. The angels are divine. So, or other people, or other things. Why focus on the things when we have Jesus, when we have Christ, focusing on Christ? That's been his big point back in chapter 1. Jesus is divine, so he's better than angels. But here, in the passage for tonight, very different argument. This is an argument that you might not have expected, because in our point is that Jesus is actually better than angels because he's like us. Okay, Jesus is better than angels because he's one of us. The angels weren't one of us, but Jesus, he's one of us. And that was absolutely essential if Jesus was going to save us. Jesus, he's the man for us. That's his point. See, there's this interesting thing that happens in the teachings of the Bible. In the teachings of the Bible, what we declare is that Jesus everything else, because in the one person you have someone who, on the one hand, he was divine, and yet on the other hand, he's just like us. He's just like us. And what the Bible teaches is that both of those things, divine and just like us, absolutely essential for our salvation. Okay, Joe, with you, maybe you kind of think to yourself, surely it wasn't important that Jesus was a man. I can't see why that would matter that much. But you know, what this passage says is that Jesus had to be like us in order to save us. Absolutely essential. Okay, look at verse 16. For indeed he does not give aid to angels, but he does give aid to the seed of Abraham. Basically, the seed of Abraham is basically just talking about people who trust in him like Abraham trusted in him. Doesn't give aid to angels, but he does give aid to the seed of Abraham. Therefore, in all things, he has his brethren. That verse says Jesus has brethren, his people, in every way, if he was going to be able to help us. See, the writer here, he's making a contrast. He's saying, if Jesus' mission was to save angels, he would have become an angel in order to save them. But Jesus' mission wasn't to save angels. Jesus' mission was to save people like us. And so he had to become like us in order to save us. Okay, but angels, some of the angels at least, actually needed saving. Some of the angels, like us, have actually rebelled against God. We call them demons, but they were angels. They sinned just like we sinned. And what this is saying is that if Jesus was on a mission to save those angels, the ones who rebelled against God from their sin, he would have had to have become an angel. He would have had to have become like them in order to save them. But Jesus didn't have that mission. He didn't have that mission. He had a mission to save people like us. And since Jesus had a mission to save people like us, he had to become one of us. Jesus does not give aid to angels, but he does give aid to the seed of Abraham. Therefore, in all things, he had to be made like his brethren. Now, you might not get that like us in order to save us or to help us, and we'll talk about that in a moment. But for the moment, I just want you to understand that what it's saying is that he had to be one of us to save us. And the writer here really underlines that Jesus is like us. He just shared in everything that we share in. Okay, look at what the writer here says about Jesus being like us. Jesus, he says, for example, in verse 14, was flesh and blood like us. Look at verse 14. It says there, inasmuch as the children have partaken of flesh and blood, he himself likewise shared in the same. Jesus shared in our flesh and blood. This is saying that though Jesus was God, yet he became a man. In order to help man, he had to become a man, is what it's saying. In Jesus, God actually chose to take on a human nature, to become flesh and blood like us, and to take on all of the limitations of what it means to be human. Jesus needed food. He needed sleep. He got hot. He got cold. He grew as a person. His body changed. He went through puberty, he had hormones rushing through his body, he learned a trade from his dad, he went through really good times, he went through really hard times. We think his dad died when he was young, from what we can gather. Jesus became flesh and blood. He shared in all of the experiences that we share in. And what this meant too was that just as we're tempted to sin, so too Jesus was tempted to sin. He was tempted like us. Look at verse 18. For in that he himself has suffered being tempted, he is able to aid those who are tempted. But part of helping people like you and me meant that Jesus actually had to be tempted, like you and me are tempted. Now, Jesus never sinned, okay? It's the one way that he's not like us. Sin, you have to realise, sin isn't actually part of our humanity. It's not the way that we were made. We weren't created for sin. And so he didn't need to be like us in that way in order to help us. But how Jesus was like us was that he experienced all of the same temptations to sin that we experience. Okay. That's a temptation to steal, isn't it? If you're being treated really badly, that's a temptation to lash out. That's a temptation to take revenge, right? And Jesus went through all of that. He went through those experiences that we go through. He felt hungry. He was treated badly. He did suffer injustice. He lost loved ones. Sometimes people flattered him. Temptation to pride. Possessions and so on if he would disobey God. Temptation to give in through what we have, Jesus went through all of the same kinds of experiences that we go through. He's like us in that way. And he is like us too in that he has suffered. We see this in verse 18. For in that he himself has suffered being tempted, he's able to aid those who are tempted. So notice there in particular that the kind of temptation that it's especially focusing on here is the temptation that actually comes through suffering. All right, this is when it's really hard not to be bitter or complaining or blaming or something like that. When we're going through hard times, that's when we actually experience that the most, isn't it? All of us would realise that sometimes when we're going through rough times, that's when we've got those temptations to actually groan, to blame, to be bitter, to complain. And Jesus went through that. Jesus knew what it is to be sick. Okay, he suffered all of the effects of sin in this world. He knew what it is to be sick. He knew what it is to be exhausted. He knew what it is to lose family and friends. He knows what it is to weep, to be mocked, to be scorned. He knows what it is to bleed. Jesus suffered as we suffer. And of course, the greatest way that Jesus went through everything that we go through was that Jesus died just as we die. As human beings, we face, as fallen human beings, we face a fearful prospect, don't we? We face the prospect of death. And Jesus faced that, and he had to go through it. Look at verse 14. Inasmuch then, as the children have partaken of flesh and blood, he himself likewise shared in the same, that through death he might destroy him who had the power of death, that is, the devil. Okay, notice there that it's actually the big example that the writer gives of how Jesus shares in what we share in. Jesus is like us because he goes through death like us. That's what he's saying. Sin like us, yet although he didn't sin as we do, yet still he experienced the effects of sin. He experienced even death itself. Jesus was like us in that way. And so we're told in verse 17 that Jesus was like us in everything. It says there, therefore, here we go. Therefore, in all things, he had to be brethren. Okay, everything that we go through. If there's anything that characterizes what it is to be human, Jesus went through it. He experienced that. And what the Bible says is that that was absolutely necessary if God was going to save us. If God was to save us, he had to become like us. He couldn't have turned into an angel and saved us. No, Jesus was better than us because Jesus was like us. He had to be like us. In all things, he became like his brethren. Now, maybe you're confused. Maybe you're thinking, so why did Jesus have to become like us in order to save us? And good question, so let me explain that now. Firstly, Jesus had to become like us to represent us to God. That comes out in verse 17 of our passage. Therefore, in all things, he had to be made like his brethren, that might be a merciful and faithful high priest. Someone who stands between us and God, isn't it? And so we think that such a person should be impressive because they're trying to take our case to God. And so they need to be impressive to God. And certainly, Jesus was impressive. Jesus was better than angels. Jesus was God himself. You don't get any more impressive than that. And so Jesus ticks that box. He ticks that box better than anyone can possibly tick it. And yet, isn't it true that if you want someone to take you to God, if you want someone to represent you before God, that you actually need someone who knows you and understands you? Isn't that what you need in order to represent you to God? Okay, to represent us to Parliament. And so we expect them to talk to us, real people on the ground, and understand our issues and our needs and so on, so that they can genuinely represent us in Parliament. Now, they might not always do that, but that's what we want from them. If a person's going to represent us, we want them to know us. And in fact, the best representative is going to be someone who is one of us. And that is what Jesus was. Jesus was one of us. Yes, he was God, but Jesus was also one of us. And that was so important. He had to be like us if he was going to represent us to God. Better than angels, Jesus is better than angels, he's one of us. He's experienced, he's been through all we go through. And so he is able to go to the front and say, I know exactly what it is like to be one of them, because I am one of them. And so I can advocate for them. So Jesus to be able to represent us to God. And then also, Jesus had to be like us so that he could atone for sin. All right, look again to verse 17. Therefore, in all things he had to be made like his brethren so that he might be a merciful and faithful high priest to God. And then it goes on, to make propitiation for the sins of the people. Now, is there a word we don't use anymore? Propitiation. As I say, we don't use it really much at all. But it means something which turns away anger. All right, that's what propitiation is. To turn away anger. If you propitiate the wrath of the king, what you do is you turn away the anger of the king. Now, before Jesus came, to turn away the wrath of God. And here's how it would work. How it would work is like this. The high priest would kill a perfect, unblemished lamb, and that perfect, unblemished lamb would take the place, as it were, of the people. Lamb didn't deserve to die, but the people, they didn't deserve to die for their sin, and so the lamb would die instead of the people. And so there was a swap. The perfect lamb was judged in the place of the imperfect person. And so the idea was that God's anger would be turned away by this swap. Just symbolic. It was symbolic because a lamb just, it can't take away sin. I mean, you think about it, a lamb is worth far less than a person, and a lamb couldn't really stand in our place and take our judgment because he's just not one of us? How can a lamb take our place when he's not actually one of us? He's just a lamb. And so if sin was ever going to be paid for, if you were ever going to get someone to really stand in our place, you had to have someone who was exactly like us. You needed a man to die for us. Only someone who was one of us could really stand in our place and die for us. And that is what Jesus did at the cross. At the cross, Jesus offered himself up as the perfect sacrifice to atone for our sin. And Jesus was able to do that because he was one of us. Okay, if Jesus was an angel, how could Jesus have been a perfect sacrifice for us? For Jesus to be a perfect sacrifice, he had to go through what we go through and still remain sinless. He had to be unblemished like that lamb. Now, I mean, it's true we have sinless angels, but, I mean, those angels, they haven't been what we go through what we go through. Angels, do they know how to be sinless in spite of hunger? Angels, do they know what it is to be sinless in spite of the frustration of being sick? In spite of the frustration of having nowhere to lay their heads? Angels don't go through what we go through. And so the fact that you may have a sinless angel, it just does not measure up. It doesn't count in the same way. No angel can substitute for us, just as no lamb could actually substitute for us. But Jesus was able to be our substitute. He was able to be our perfect substitute because he is like us in everything. Jesus is the one, like us, who is able to atone for our sin. Jesus is the perfect sacrifice for sin because he is like us. And so we can turn to Jesus and we can put our trust in him and we can ask him to stand before God on our behalf. Because Jesus is like us and he has paid for the sins of people like us. So can you see why it mattered that Jesus was a man? Can you see that although there is something impressive in Jesus, he is God himself, yet there is also something immensely wonderful in that he was also man? And that was just as important. See, in Jesus you get both. In Jesus you have one who has all of the grandeur of God himself. This is one who you want to take your cause to God. And yet in Jesus also you have someone like us, who knows us, can represent us, can be our substitute, and can atone for our sin. It's what you have in Jesus. And you don't get that combination anywhere else. And so the challenge for us is to put our trust in him and to go to God through him, seeking forgiveness from the Father because of what Jesus has done.